Wine and the Bible, Christianity's scandal and error. In our series thus far, I have first sought to give you a picture of how difficult our subject is and have described it as Christianity's scandal and error. Just this past week, reading material of those who say in the Bible, fermented drink is allowed, and the quality, the learnedness of the men who hold this view, I am absolutely amazed. So I've called this the scandal and error. We set the criminal free and imprison the innocent. I have proposed to you that the Bible deals with two kinds of wine: good wine, grape juice, and bad wine, fermented wine. Then we have looked at two words that have been translated as wine, and those are tirosh and yayin. And I have proposed to you that tirosh is not wine at all. Now, I know if you want to prove me wrong, you have a lot of study to do. I would be glad if somebody would do that study. I might learn from you. But I have proposed to you that tirosh is not wine at all, but that it is a broad term for more or less sweet fruits. And this morning we want to look at the most crucial word, shekar, spelled S-H-E-K-A-R, shekar. Shekar is a noun, and we will look at its very close relative, the verb shakar. And it is not the purpose of these messages to cover all the minor words that have to do with our topic. My aim is to cover those words most crucial to our study. Now, this morning, as the other message, you have to stay with me. This is work. If you want to think through the message that I'm giving you today, you would listen to it a number of times yet, and you would still have work to work out all of this. And so I want to encourage you, if you get sleepy, try to pay attention. This is going to lay the foundation or the groundwork for some of what I will tell you in the future. So we're going to begin with a noun, and we have been considering these words from Deuteronomy 14. So let me read from 14:22 through 26. I know the passage has been read for us. Deuteronomy 14:22, you shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe of your grain, your new wine, tirosh, and your oil of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too far for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, then when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, King James Version, strong drink, for whatever your heart desires. Now, in the earlier verse, he said tirosh. Now he says wine and strong drink, same, referring to the same area. Whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. And if ever you wanted a verse to give you the freedom to drink intoxicating liquor, here it is. Old King James Version, you can go to Jerusalem and you can buy wine and intoxicating drink, strong drink, and just have at her. And so we want to look at this passage. They could buy whatever they desired. We want to look at this word shekar, spelled H-S-C-S-H-E-K-A-R, and we're looking at the noun. And we find this word in verse 26. For wine or similar drink. The word similar drink or strong drink. There's our word shekar. This word occurs 23 times in the Old Testament, and the King James translates as strong drink 21 of those 23 times. Now, what is strong drink? Well, it must be intoxicating liquor, right? So once it is translated strong wine, and once a drunkard. The words yayin and shekor often occur together, and they are translated in the King James Version as wine and strong drink. Now, if shekor is a strong drink, what is wine then? If shekor is a strong drink, what is wine then? Is it not strong? From what I can gather, there was no stronger drink in Bible times than wine. Fermented drink was as strong as you got. There was no distillation of liquor. Listen to the theological word book of the Old Testament on this. It says of this word, most likely not liquor. That's the word strong drink. Most likely not liquor, for there is no evidence of distilled liquor in ancient times. Volume 2, page 927. So it could not be stronger than wine. So wine is strong drink. What are we talking about? The King James Version usually translates this word as strong drink. That is, I think, a most unfortunate translation. Fermented wine is as strong a drink as was available. Listen to a theological word book on the Old Testament on the word yayin. Wine was the most intoxicating drink in ancient times. So how can you have wine and strong drink? All the wine was a light wine, that is, not fortified with extra alcohol. Concentrated alcohol was not known in the Middle Ages when the Arabs invented distillation. Alcohol is an Arabic word. So what is now called liquor or strong drink, that is, whiskey, gin, etc., and the 20% fortified wines were unknown in Bible times. Beer was brewed by various methods, but its alcoholic content was light. The strength of natural wines is limited by two factors. The percentage of alcohol will be half of the percentage of the sugar in the juice. By the way, if the sugar content is too high, it won't ferment. So you can only get that strong with the alcohol. Continue the quote. And if the alcohol content is much above 10 to 11%, the yeast cells are killed and fermentation ceases. Probably ancient wines were 7 to 10%. Thus, distilled liquors, such as we have today, were not known in Bible times. So fermented wine was as strong a drink as there was. It would then not make sense to say, drink neither wine nor strong drink. Or, you may buy wine or strong drink, if these are all fermented. Make no sense. Wine, if fermented, was strong drink. And if we use this translation, then we must conclude that this wine was unfermented. Otherwise, it could simply just leave out the word wine and call it strong drink. Yet it seems that almost all commentators follow the idea that shekor was a strong drink. Strong's Concordance says on Luke 1:15, a Greek translation of the word shekor, that it is strong drink, an intoxicating beverage, different from wine. It was an artificial product made of a mixture of sweet ingredients, whether derived from grain and vegetables or from the juice of fruits, dates, etc., or a decoction of honey. Charles Ryrie says on a note to Leviticus 10:9 that priests were warned against using wine and intoxicating drink. That's the words shekar. Intoxicating drink. So he calls shekor an intoxicating drink. So tell me then, what does wine mean in these contexts? If you have a strong drink, what does wine mean then? Is not intoxicating? Then he says that this word comes from a word meaning to inebriate, and I find no evidence. Now, I may not be able to get to all the evidence, but I find absolutely no evidence for that. Like the Scanlon case I mentioned at the outset, it seems to me that this is just a natural conclusion, but it has no valid basis. James Patrick Holden, from an article on the internet entitled A Little Whine, W-H-I-N-E, says that the root word of shekor means to be tipsy and is associated with strong alcoholic drink. I called a Hebrew scholar friend of mine to check out this root. I wasn't able to trace it. Haven't had a call back from him yet. But I think there's little doubt but that this man has taken his definition from Strong's Concordance, and I find just no evidence for it. I'm not sure where it comes from. So, again, there is simply no basis I find to support this view. It seems to me just accepted as that's the case. So what then is shekor? Here is my own definition of this word in conclusion to my own studies. You may jot it down for verse 26, the word strong drink or similar drink. What is this word? Well, shekor refers to the juice from any fruit other than grapes. It refers to the juice from any fruit other than grapes. And the juice may be fresh, preserved, or fermented, and it is still called shekor. That's a generic term. The New King James Version is quite inconsistent in its translation of this word, but it is quite interesting in how it translates it in numerous cases. In cases where yayin and shekor occur together, it translates it sometimes as wine and sometimes as similar drink. Now, similar drink, I would see as a good translation. It's still juice, but it's juice that's not made, doesn't come from the grape. So, the fact is that shekor was different from wine because it didn't come from the grapes. It came from other fruit. Now, the theological word book of the Old Testament admits that strong drink is not a good translation. It says of this word, most likely not liquor, for there is no evidence of distilled liquor in ancient times. So that gives me some evidence that shekor does not mean strong drink. The New King James Version translates it as similar drink. And what do they mean by similar drink? Well, wine is the juice from grapes. Shekor is the juice from any other fruit than grapes. Is there any evidence for that definition? Well, listen to the theological word book of the Old Testament again. It denotes not just barley beer, but any alcoholic beverage prepared from either grain or fruit. In all but two of its 23 uses in the Old Testament, it appears in connection with yayin, wine, usually following it, once preceding it. William Patton agrees with this when he says, yayin is the juice of grapes, fermented or otherwise. Shekor is the juice made from any other than grapes. It could be made from dates or grain or any other fruit. Some time ago, we were in Grand Prairie, and one of the stores we went into had a shelf of books, and one book was called the Everything Wine Book. I've quoted to you from this book already. I glanced through it and bought it for my research, and in the introduction, it says this, "Dear reader, there was a time when we didn't know the difference between sangria and sangiovese, except that one had fruit in it. Right? As soon as it had other fruit in it, it was called a different name. So we have a modern example of a drink differently named because it was mixed grapes with other fruit. So just what is shekor? It is the juice made from anything but grapes. Yayin is made from grapes. Shekor is made from any other fruit. Now, some of these definitions include a drink made from grain. I have not yet found any evidence for that yet. That doesn't mean it's not there. My research is a little limited. So in Deuteronomy 14, 22 through 26, God's people were instructed to lay up a tithe of all their grains, fruits, tirosh, not wine, fruits, and oils. These they were to take to Jerusalem and enjoy them in that place. But if they lived too far from Jerusalem, they were to sell this tithe and then purchase these goods at Jerusalem and then partake of those things they have purchased. Now note very carefully that what they were to purchase, 14:26, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink. So instead of saying that they were to purchase tirosh, which was what they were to tithe in the verse 23, they are to buy wine or similar drink. Why not tirosh? Why not buy tirosh when they got to Jerusalem? Well, it was too far to carry fruit, and at Jerusalem they would purchase the drinks made from that fruit, which was yayin and shekor. Tirosh made these both made out of tirosh. If it were made of grapes, it would be yayin. If it were made of other fruits, it would be shekor. Conclusion: tirosh is fruit, or the fresh juice of any fruit. If the fruit was grapes and the juice was fermented or preserved, it would be yayin. If it were preserved or fermented fruit juice from other than grapes, then it would be shekor. So if you look at the back side of your notes, of your handout, you will have there a chart that gives you the words as I see them. There is, first of all, tirosh, which is fruit. And included in fruit are the grapes, which makes yayin. So you have the grapes, which makes yayin or wine. And it is called yayin or wine, whether it is fresh, preserved, or fermented. If it is fresh and preserved, it is good wine. If it is fermented, it is bad wine. That's my interpretation. If it is any other kind of fruit, then you have shekor. That's the second word. And when the shekor was fresh or preserved, you have a good drink. Everybody was allowed to drink this. When it is fermented, then it is a bad drink. Can you follow that? That's the chart. That's how I see this word. So how do you determine if yayin or shekor is fermented or not fermented in any text? Because the word don't tell you if it's fermented or not. You have to determine from the context. When you can't determine from the context, you have to determine from all the rest of the Bible as best you can. So we want to look at the verb shakar, spelled S-H-A-K-A-R. And we must consider the verb that is closely related to shakar. That's shakar. This word occurs 19 times in the Old Testament, and this is worth jotting down. 14 of those 19 times it has been translated to be drunk. 14 of 19 times it has been translated to be drunk. I think it may well be that the word shekor is translated as strong drink or fermented drink because it is believed that the word shakor means to be drunk. I think that's what has happened. I'm not sure. So I believe this is an error and has contributed to Christianity's misunderstanding of wine in the Bible. James Patrick Holden from the article, A Little Wine, says that the root word of shekor means to be tipsy and is associated with strong drink. From all my research, I find no evidence for that. Gesenius, one of the finest of Hebrew scholars, says that the root of shakor means to drink to the full. That's worth jotting down. Gesenius. Can't quote you a higher writer. To drink to the full. It does not mean to be drunk. It means to drink to the full. Now you can imagine what happens if you drink wine to the full. Right. That's why we get the word drunk from it. Doesn't mean that. Easton's Bible Dictionary says it means to drink to the full or to be drunk. It means to be drunk when you're full of wine. It doesn't mean to be drunk when you're full of water. You don't get drunk on water. So just what does shakor mean? I think it does not mean to be drunk. It means to be full of drink. Strong's Concordance says that shakor is the superlative of shakah, which it says means to quaff. Now what does to quaff mean? Funk and Wagnall's College Dictionary says it means to drink, especially copiously. Right? Now this is the superlative. If it means to drink copiously, and this is the superlative, it means to drink as much as you can. You can't go farther. The superlative is the highest, and it's a superlative of this word. If then shakar is the superlative of shakah, it means to drink to the fullest. Now let me say something about the connotation and denotation of words. The denotation of a word is what it means. The connotation of a word is that which it may suggest or imply. Let me give you an example from our word. Turn to Genesis chapter 9. Genesis chapter 9. We've been in this chapter a number of times because of the first occurrence of drunkenness and yayin and so on. 20 through 21. And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine, and was drunk, and became uncovered in his tent. The verse would literally read, then he drank of the wine, and drank to the fullest. And what would that mean? A drunk, right? So we translate it drunk. What it means, he was full to the fullest and became uncovered in the tent. So if Noah filled himself right up with wine and became uncovered, the clearest implication is that he became drunk. But the word does not mean to become drunk. It means to be filled with. He was filled with wine, and therefore, the connotation, he was drunk. That's why we have it translated as it is. So, if you drank yourself full of water, you would have exactly the same word, but it wouldn't mean drunk. You couldn't even translate it drunk. So I have little doubt that the meaning to be drunk is a secondary meaning derived from being full. When one is full of fermented wine, of course one is drunk. You don't have to be full of wine to be drunk. You don't need very much at all to be drunk. From the information I have at present, I conclude that chakor is a verb means to drink to the full. We will meet the counterpart of this word in the New Testament, and there my point will be, I believe, well made. That scripture will be none other than John 2, where Jesus made wine. So one can easily see that if this word means to drink to the full, that it came to be used to describe drunkenness. Drunkenness happens from drinking fermented drinks to the full. You don't even have to drink to the full to be drunk. But one may drink non-intoxicating drinks to the full and not be drunk. And this word is used for that as well. So, this word does not always carry the idea of drunkenness. Consider Genesis 43:34. Turn to Genesis 43:34. I think I have the wrong chapter. 43:34. Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him. What is the word? Were merry with him? It's shakor. So, if we insist that the word shakor means intoxicating drink and drunkenness, then this verse says they drank and were drunk with Joseph. Right? They drank and were drunk with Joseph. The theological word book of the Old Testament says that this verse could well be translated, they drank and became drunk with him. But that's not the meaning at all. If that is the correct translation, then this is the only reference in all the Bible to a sin Joseph committed. But this passage simply means they drank and drank to the full, as we usually do after a meal. That is, they were filled with food and drink. Young's literal translation of the Bible says, you see how some of this contributes to Christianity's scandal and error? If it is translated this way, it brings about this kind of reading. And he lifted up gifts, this is what the Young's literal translation says, and he lifted up gifts from before him unto them, and the gift of Benjamin is five hands more than the gifts of all of them, and they drank, yeah, they drank abundantly with him. Abundantly. They translate the word shakor as abundantly. Now, that's my time, like, I'm going to finish all of this. So here's the question, did Joseph get drunk with his brothers? Well, I believe he did not. They were simply filled with drink with him, as is the case, the usual case after a big meal and a celebration. William Patton, quoting someone else, says, Plutarch affirms that before the time of Simeticus, who lived 600 years before Christ, the Egyptians neither drank fermented wine nor offered it in sacrifice. If that is so, that would be ample proof for my statement. However, others contest that statement. How did they get drunk, how did they drink wine in Egypt? Well, Genesis 40:11 gives us an indication of this. The butler who is imprisoned with Joseph is actually what is called a cupbearer. And the cupbearer is the one that would give drink to Pharaoh. The New Bible Dictionary says they were often called pure of hands, or clean of hands. You can imagine that. You know what? Here's Pharaoh sitting over there. Here comes the butler, and he brings the grapes. Not the wine. He brings the grapes, and then he squeezes out the juice, and then he strains the pulp out of it, and he gives Pharaoh to drink. That's how they drank wine. That was wine. So they were called clean of hands. You can imagine that Pharaoh expected clean hands when they made drink for him. So why were the cupbearers called clean of hands? If you were a king and had someone squeeze the juice out of grapes right in front of you, what would you demand first of all? Clean hands. So let me quote Patton again. In remote antiquity, grapes were brought to the table and the juice there expressed for immediate use. From the same quote he writes, Josephus' version of the butler's speech is as follows. He said that by the king's permission, he pressed the grapes into a goblet, and having strained the sweet wine, he gave it to the king to drink, and that he received it graciously. So when Joseph drank with his brothers, did he get drunk? Unthinkable. But that's the translation of the very same verb. Nor does the word shachor, which is used in this text, demand that this be the case. Turn with me to Haggai, one of the minor prophets of the Old Testament. Toward the end of the minor prophets, just before the New Testament. Haggai chapter 1. Verse 6. A little hard to find. You have sown much and bring in little. You eat but do not have enough. You drink but you are not filled with drink. There's the word shachor. You are not filled with drink. It doesn't say you drink but you are not drunk. Some of the other versions may do that. But you drink but you are not filled with drink. The word shachor. Not filled. So, let's turn to one more. Song of Solomon, chapter 5. Song of Solomon. Just before Isaiah. Song of Solomon, chapter 5. Verse 1. I have come to my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink. Yes, drink deeply, O beloved ones. You know what? If we insist that shachor means drunkenness, then it would say at the end of this verse, drink, yes, get drunk. Drink, yes, get drunk. That's not the meaning at all. It can't be. That's next to abomination. And so I believe that this word shachor, what does it mean? It means to drink to the full. When someone drinks wine to the full, you can translate it as drunkenness because that's the state you're in when you drink wine to the full. Now I think that some of these translations have led us into this scandal and error to think that wine is okay in the Old Testament. So let me just briefly look at the word oinos in your notes there. Oinos is the Greek translation of the Hebrew yayin. It's simply wine, just like we have yayin. And when Jesus made wine in John chapter 2, it's this word that is used, oinos, as translation of yayin. Then there is glucos. Turn to Acts chapter 2. We have a few moments here. Acts chapter 2. We're going to look at all of these passages yet one by one. Acts chapter 2 and verse 13. Let me read verse 12 as well. So they were all amazed and perplexed, saying to one another, whatever could this mean? Others mocking said, they are full of new wine. Glucose. Glucose. It's the word translation. It's the word, it comes from sugar. Sugar. If you have sweet wine, you know it's not fermented. If it's a little bit sweet, you know that some of it is not fermented. Otherwise, it wouldn't be sweet. When it is all fermented, it is no longer sweet at all. So, what is the conclusion of all of this? Well, I've shown you the chart. If you want to look at the chart again, Tirosh, my understanding, is fruit. Yayin is a branch of fruit from which they make wine. Now, do you know why they have a separate branch for, why they have a separate word for wine made from grapes and wine or juices made from other fruits? Because the juice made from grapes was the preference everywhere. Everybody wanted the juice made from grapes. That is a special word for it. It's called yayin. Otherwise, it would be simply be shekor. So yayin, when it is fresh or preserved, is good wine. When it is fermented, my view, bad wine. Shekor, that's juice made from any other fruit. It's made the same way, by the way. Put it in the vats, trample it, and so on. When it is fresh and preserved, is good and similar, a good similar drink. And when it is fermented, it is bad drink. So I think it is most unfortunate that shekor has been called strong drink or intoxicating drink. It may in certain contexts, but that is not the meaning of the word. The word shekor means to drink to the full. One may drink unfermented grape juice or fermented unfermented fruit juice to the full and not be drunk. Still the same word used in the translation. And so when we come to later studies, this groundwork will be very important to understand as we look at the various texts that cause us difficulty in the scriptures. Well, may the Lord bless those words.